So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Reviewme.
Oklahoma. They call it the Sooner State. So named for those early pioneers who jumped the gun in the land rush of the 1880s. Sooners, as in too soon. As in maybe they didn't exactly follow the rules. I say this certainly not to pass judgment, for my granddaddy was a Sooner. But to suggest, my friends, the spirit that is Oklahoma, and thereby the heart of its people, an ambitious bunch of independent, strong-willed survivors who tend to live by the principle of feast or famine. You see, in Oklahoma, not all legends are about victory. Some are less obvious. Some you don't see coming. Some are born out of struggle.
Welcome, everybody, to Review Away, the very first Review Away of the decade. Way.
Right. Yes, I just...
Did you not realize we had New Year's last night?
New Year's Eve. I forgot. Forgot about that.
First of all, I want to thank you because you spent New Year's Eve in New York City, and then you flew back here for Review Away here on Sunday night.
I certainly did. I was in New York City, and I witnessed...
Snooki
ball drop in Times Square.
I have to say, I was shocked. I actually went out of my way to watch this.
Did you?
It was something else.
Spectacular, wasn't it?
Wow.
My dress is falling off. This is a disaster. I know. We got to help her.
What were you doing on New Year's Eve? How did you
watching MTV? I actually just hung out with some friends and my girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't do anything too crazy.
No?
I'm not a big New Year's fan to begin with. So,
well, what happened? What did you talk and what were some of the topics discussed?
We chatted a lot. Most of us were kind of envious about you being in New York City for New Year's Eve. I mean, that is one of the events of like the year for people worldwide.
Well,
I mean, New Year's Eve, you think of Times Square.
You know, I got to say,
Snooki in a ball.
Definitely. I got to say it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Of the last decade, yes.
Wow.
And one I will probably never, ever, ever forget. Ever.
Well, let's find out if one of those other events you'll never forget of the last decade was watching Legendary, the WWE Studios release.
What a segue.
Yes. I work hard for those ones. Now, as usual, I recap this movie like I do a wrestling show.
Yeah, I really don't know
the way
we're supposed to do these because we're not movie critics.
No.
By any means. We're wrestling
critics.
Well,
at the same time, you know, movie critics, like, I mean, you watch Ebert and Roper. I mean, they'll spend like 5-10 minutes on a movie at most.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel people download this because they want some sizable program here.
Yeah.
They don't want us to spend 10 minutes talking about something.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm not going scene by scene.
No.
I more or less just pointed out the highlights of the movie.
Okay.
Well, depending on your definition of highlight. First of all, the opening credits, they featured the music was composed by... James Johnston, and I forgot to go back and check, but he also put his middle name in there specifically to avoid being called Jim Johnston, which I found interesting.
Really?
It was like James something Johnston.
Like James A. Johnston or something.
I think it was a full middle name,
really?
Actually. Yeah, it might have been just it. I don't know. But go back and check that. That was rather funny.
Hold on. What was he credited as in No Holds Barred?
Oh, I can't remember.
Wasn't it James? It was something. I don't know. But anyway, this is not his first movie.
No, not his first barbecue. The opening featured all these like period shots of like Oklahoma in like the 1800s, and we have Danny Glover explaining to us what a Sooner was in Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
This might have been the most educational part of the movie because I did not know what an Oklahoma Sooner was.
I didn't know. I never knew why they called them Sooners. It was because they always arrived early.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
So they're always soon.
Yeah. I'd also have to have an ounce of interest in football to have gone out of my way to find out what a sooner was. Because they're early.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Where are the laters?
I wonder what the decision was for picking Oklahoma. Do you think it had any
I don't know. This thing wasn't shot in Oklahoma, so I don't know. Yeah. I mean, you know what? Oklahoma is one of the kind of wrestling strongholds.
Yeah.
I mean, right up there with kind of like the Midwest. I mean, that is where you associate amateur wrestling with.
Yeah, so I perhaps it had nothing to do with Jim Ross. I guess the wrestling fan in me just figures maybe.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, too.
Maybe Vince McMahon would dedicate a movie to Jim Ross.
Well, as you can tell from how I started off, that's exactly how I thought of this as well.
No, but I doubt it. But because this was probably a script that was shopped around. I actually went on IMDb afterwards, and somebody posted that they had read this script 6 years ago working for another distribution company, and I guess it ended up being WWE finally ended up producing it.
Yeah, I can't remember. This originally had a different name,
yeah.
And then they changed it to Legendary. I don't know what the name was, but it did go through a name change.
Mm-hmm.
The main character in this movie is Cal Chetley. I don't know who played him, but he is, when they do the flashbacks on Dexter when Dexter was a little kid, that's who it was. So
the
fucked up version of Dexter as a child is Cal Chetley,
mm-hmm.
who is, lives with his mom, who is a single mother because his dad, who was a wrestling legend in the city, died. And we'll find out later why. And our first scene is where he's being picked on by these bullies led by, I didn't even get this guy's name, so throughout the notes, I just referred to him as Derek Bateman from NXT, the little rat fucker on...
I don't know who that is.
Oh, the guy who says he looks like a rat.
Oh, that guy.
Daniel Bryan's rookie.
Yeah.
So if I refer to Derek, I'm referring to the bully.
He looks like him.
I thought he did.
Fine.
Meanwhile, Cal Chetley looked like Harry Potter in this at times, and Josh Matthews, I found.
I can see the Josh Matthews. I can't really see Harry Potter, but fine. But
he also, the bullies attack him, and he gets this cut on his head.
Oh.
Maybe that's why I thought of Harry Potter.
Right, okay.
Then, if you ever want to look up the term exposition, it's something you see in lots of movies where mm-hmm. they don't have a unique way to explain and set the scene.
Yeah.
So you get scenes like this where Cal Chetley comes home, pulls out a box on his bed, and just randomly pulls out newspaper clippings about his father being killed and being a great wrestler. It's like, fuck, is that lazy, you know?
Yeah,
like,
well, okay, but that happens from time to time. I could buy that.
Would you just randomly go home,
pull
out newspaper clippings?
He wants to reminisce, and what better way to do it than via newspaper clippings?
Fine.
Still in a box.
We meet the mom here, Patricia Clarkson, who is like a legitimate actress here. I believe Academy Award nominee,
yes.
As they hit us over the head with in the commercials,
mm-hmm.
pushing the DVD. Basically, she just announces in passing she's having dinner with some district attorney tonight, which would be a plot line later on in the show.
Yeah, but I guess so. But we never see this guy. In fact, I didn't remember.
No, he's the most significant non-existent character in this movie.
She's like, Mom, Mom's going to have dinner with this dude. And then cut to the next scene.
Yeah, John Cena plays Mike Chetley, the older brother, the older troubled brother of Cal Chetley, who used to himself be a great wrestler. A great amateur wrestler. So already my suspension of disbelief was compromised here with this, that John Cena, the great amateur wrestling great in Oklahoma. They show him on an oil rig where he's fired. And then we meet the other main character in this movie. All throughout this movie, I thought her name was Lily. And in the final scene, I read it's Lully.
Yeah.
Lully. It's the girl, it's Madeline Martin from Californication, which is a great show that I enjoy. And we are introduced where she takes money from guys and shows them her boobs.
Yeah, how old is this girl supposed to be?
High school, which would mean under 18, I would think. So this was
I'm guessing 14 at the youngest, okay? 14 or 13.
Now, they didn't show her boobs in this movie.
No, but we're learning that this girl is getting boobs for the first time in her life. And I don't know. I don't know about you, John, but like when I went to school,
some girls developed at 14.
Yes, but I don't think guys were so curious by that point. Yes, they were curious, but not. To me, I relate guys paying to see a girl's boobs as they're developing probably at a much younger age than high school. By the time that they're in high school,
I see what you mean. Yeah, I guess I kind of just blur those age lines, but I bought it. Guys want to see tits.
Okay.
So then we get this was funny because all of a sudden Cal just wants to be an amateur wrestler and follow in the footsteps of his dad and his brother. And he goes home to weigh himself, and his problem is he's so small. So he puts on all of his clothes, his shoes, and a backpack, got onto the scale, and weighed 145 pounds, which was depressing because I weigh 5 pounds more than this guy. And he had a backpack on.
Yes.
And you probably weigh less than this guy with a backpack.
Yeah, maybe. I think I do. Yeah. So I'm
maybe
probably the same.
Me and Wei are... Even, like, Wei especially.
I'm probably the same weight as this guy, actually.
So,
probably
we are Cal Chetley, everybody.
Yes. But no, I think his goal was that he wanted to weigh less. He just wanted to see
Well, no,
how
he put the
weighed.
Backpack on and stuff because he wanted to get
didn't
his weight
he,
up.
Didn't he have the backpack on beforehand, before he stepped on the scale? And then when he saw his weight, he decided to take the backpack off.
Why would you weigh yourself with a backpack?
Because he's dumb. That's why.
Idiot.
But anyway, he wanted to... Just see what his weight class was to weigh in. And we learned that he's a 135.
He's a bantamweight.
Yes.
He's going after Dominic Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to the training class for the wrestling team. He's going to compete in the bantamweight division. And then he starts working out. And the thing is, his mom is very detached to wrestling. She thinks it killed her husband and lost her son. So she's very against this amateur wrestling bullshit. And... They're at the table having dinner, very awkward dinner scene, where she goes to pour gravy on his plate, and he says, no, thank you. Then she goes to put dressing on his salad. Like, what a fucking mama's boy here. Like, does your mom put your salad dressing on your salad for you? Like,
well, she was going to do it anyway. Well, she's serving you dinner.
Anyway, so he says, no, thank you to the salad dressing here. And then all of a sudden... She has the revelation and says, quote, damn it, I knew it. Scale, dieting, you're wrestling. I think this was a revelation that he was like on smack. She basically tells him that he's a dork and he's going to get destroyed in wrestling, that he's not designed for wrestling. He's better for books.
You're better for geology. You should be doing geology, not wrestling.
So
she conveys that there's something she really hates about pro wrestling. Or,
not
sorry,
pro wrestling, amateur wrestling. This
amateur
bullshit.
Wrestling. And you just know at the end of the movie she will learn to embrace it.
What are you talking about, Wei?
All right.
I thought the movie would end here.
Okay.
So then Cal, we see a scene where he hitchhikes to go find his brother. And some crack addict answers the door.
By the way, Cal here is working on some pump. Before this, like, he's working on some pump.
Okay, is that why
broken?
That gift? Okay, I had no idea what was going on at all.
A pump? I don't know what the pump is used for. It just appeared
They just put these stupid plot points in that went nowhere.
So anyway, there's a pump here. We're introduced to the pump.
The pump.
Okay.
Stupid movie. Cal finds his brother. He's a deadbeat here, who's... Apparently not in that bad because Christ is he like ripped to shit here.
Yeah. How is this guy so poor?
I've never seen a deadbeat look in better shape than Mike Chetley.
Seriously.
Who's in so many scenes without a shirt, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I understand why they put John Cena in this movie. Obviously there is probably very little option. You know, he's your most marketable guy, but it's so hard to believe.
Should have been Festus.
Right. But it's just
or
so
William
hard.
Regal.
It's so hard to take this bodybuilder with arms basically bigger than his head.
Probably like 7%
seriously.
Body fat. I mean, this is ridiculous.
In these He's types apparently, of emotional scenes.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
So, John Cena really is not a main character in this. He's extremely limited, and I think that was for the better.
Patricia Clarkson
and the little kid do the heavy lifting in this movie.
Yes, he says about 5 words in the first 30 minutes of this movie.
And I had no problem with that.
And the words were like, how long?
Yeah, very wooden.
Right.
So Cal wants Mike to train him for wrestling, and Cena basically tells him to fuck off and that the coach can teach him the basics about wrestling. The mother approaches the coach, says she doesn't want to lose another son to wrestling. The coach says, you're ridiculous. She's like, okay, I don't know you that well, but I'll trust you. Then we get a Cal's first wrestling match, way.
Yeah.
Where they booked him like Caval, where he was just murdered here, and he receives a swollen eye. Like, I mean, just taken apart in this wrestling match.
Maybe that's where they were going to go with Caval.
Maybe Caval would... Ray was going to be his older brother, who's left him and wore a mask.
Yes. Yes. Right.
I want you to teach me the basics of wrestling. Luck. The chip is...
Like Mr. Boston. I'm Street Fighter.
It's my favorite video of the year. I hope this guy makes more. I would be so happy. If he makes them on a weekly basis, I'm going to air him on a weekly basis
see an
here.
Update from Caval.
I'm actually going to find that guy online and email him. It was so good.
Cal calls Cena to tell him that he's wrestling, but Cena's girlfriend. I'm just going to call him Cena.
Mike Chetley.
And Cena's equally deadbeat girlfriend who lives in the trailer with him picks up the phone and says she's going to deliver the message, but she never does. And so Cal weighs in at this point and looks incredibly scared at the weigh-ins. And
yes.
He has his first match where he wrestles with a shirt on.
Yep. Very small fellow. Then we get a scene where Cal is walking with his friend Donald, and there's these fucking bullies that just like follow him around the whole movie. It's so cliche, and Derek Bateman throws a newspaper at Cal, and it says that his brother's been arrested for assault, and the bond has been set at $5,000. So this leads to Cal getting the scooter from Lully, who's got this massive crush on Cal.
Lully,
stupid name. And Cal goes to the Muskogee County Courthouse where his brother is appearing in court. And Cal just walks into the courthouse and asks to speak on behalf of his brother. Now, would that fly in court?
I don't know.
Can he just walk in and, like, cut a promo?
I don't know. And not only lies! Right. Not only does he do that, he doesn't have to go through any of the formalities.
Yeah, he's not under oath, and he just tells a flagrant lie about how important Mike is and how Mike helps him and is a father to him and all this bullshit.
And the judge buys it.
Yes.
Basically,
go to Muskogee County to get off. That's where Jeff Hardy should be plea bargaining.
Basically, all he did was go into the courthouse and says, hey, judge, can I say something? And judge says, sure. Your Honor, I promise you this will never, ever happen again. And the judge says, okay.
Yeah,
take him away.
No problem.
Saves him.
Oh, so this leads to the two bonding. And they go back to Cena's trailer, and they chat about life. Cena says he cannot remember the last 8 years of his life. So they should have had Perry Saturn here. Says that. And then Cal asks him about Pad.
I would buy Perry Saturn in this role. Totally.
He'd be great. This old guy with a tattoo on his face.
Yeah. He's like out of shape.
Done meth. He asks about his dad, and Cena replies, one day dad was there, and one day he was gone. Thanks. Thanks for the fucking basic sum up of where... He asked him about his dad, not what exactly happened. Then we get our next bonding scene with the mom and Lully, because they're going to do girl things one day. And this occurs when the mom is asking where Cal is. And Lully says, I can either lie to you or break a promise to my best friend that he took the scooter and went to Muskogee County to bullshit a court judge. Then Cena starts training Cal. They go to a gym. And Cena says there's three things to learn in wrestling. Offense, defense, and psychology.
Yeah.
Yeah, psychology.
Maybe that's what, who is it? Was it Michael Cole that was commenting on someone's... Oh, it was Scott Hudson.
Yeah, Scott Hudson was talking about psychology of midnight.
Well, maybe that's what he was referring to.
Yes. They teach Cal a single leg takedown. Then Cal asks about the legendary reverse cradle that Cena once used in a match. And Cena just says, that's too advanced. You can't learn it.
Yeah.
It's like, and right here, I already had the final scene of the movie.
Yeah. It's like the triple deke from the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah. Cena's psychology lesson for today was for Cal to imagine his girlfriend in the seat of his opponent's car. Mm-hmm. And if he loses, she's going home with him. Which is like the wrestling stipulation we always joke about. Why a guy would put his woman up for grabs. This is why, Wei.
Yeah.
And he also says that when you weigh in, you have to weigh in naked.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows you're confident about your body.
Sure.
And you have to listen to music. So this leads to Cal's next match, where he morphs into John Fitch. And he grinds out a victory with a decision. Mm-hmm. As Cena watches in a staircase, because he can't show his face to everyone, because they're going to ask him, hey, Mike, what are you up to? And he can't face that question.
No,
because he's a deadbeat.
This was all taking place within a musical montage, one of many musical montages. A
lot of montages here.
Set to... this was about as cookie cutter as you can get with something like this. It was like a U2 song playing in the background.
Yep.
With a lot of good things happening. Like Mike is doing well at his job now, and then this guy Cal.
One thing turns around, Wei. It's a...
Gets a bunch of good victories. And
high tide raises all boats.
Yes.
So we get the montage, and then Cena brings in the secret weapon. We call him the Gnat. It's this little stocky black man who's 145 pounds.
And then Cal greets him by saying...
How much do you weigh?
No, he says, shit howdy, how are you?
What? That's how he said.
Yeah, that's what he said. Shit howdy, how are you? We get another musical montage these guys training.
Blindfolded. And this leads, this was great, because this was our first rap montage, Wei.
Oh, yeah.
Because we've got a black guy, so that means rap montage.
Well, not only was it a rap montage, it was a John Cena rap montage.
Yes.
John Cena rapping in the background.
The mother and Lully are getting ready for the dance that Cal's going to take Lully to. Lully. And gives her motherly advice about how to avoid being a whore and still get guys to like you. And says, you've got to tease them. Don't give them the whole package all at once. You've got to make them want you. And I'm a fucking loser, but...
I know where you're going with this.
This is like how you build a pay-per-view.
Yes, I know. Can't give them the whole package.
You gotta make them pay for something.
Yes.
The boobs should be pay-per-view,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Can't be on a free television date.
It's the exact same thing. You got to tease them. Tease them a little.
John Pollock and Wei Ting, folks.
Make him chase.
So, this was a very fun scene.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to another training sequence, and the Gnat tells Cena, man, what happened to you? You broke your number one rule. You stopped moving. And says to keep teaching Cal. And then Cena's invigorated, and he goes to show Cal the reverse cradle and how he pulled it off, and that it's a last-ditch move where you put a headlock on the guy and you flip him over and you, like, hook a leg.
Yes. You have to play possum first, basically.
Yeah. You got to sell.
Okay.
Then we go to the Winter Storm Dance, and we got the most awkward high school fight ever because Cal and Lully are by the drinks, and Derek Bateman walks up, and he wants to see Lully's boobs. He says, come on, I've been the only guy who hasn't gone down Boob Boulevard. She says no. So what does he do? This is like implied rape almost. He undoes the back of her dress and tears it. And they leave the dance. How is this guy not like prosecuted for this? You can't just like rip a woman's clothes off in the middle of a public gymnasium.
This is Oklahoma, where they're pretty lenient on laws.
All right. Well, it leads to a scene by a water fountain where Cal and Lully kiss. And then we see Cena in a bar.
You know what? I wonder, though. This is a... I I feel like this is something that we've seen in many movies where a girl is a slut, but you feel sorry for her. And in the end, she becomes, you still a good person, a good girl. Why haven't we seen this in professional wrestling? Where you have maybe a female valet that's a slut, and then she does a baby face turn.
Victoria, she was one of the Godfather's hoes, and now she's...
But it was never mentioned in storyline.
Kelly was an exhibitionist. Okay. And now she's become a good girl.
Yeah, but was there
any,
was there ever any point in the storyline where maybe, Evan Bourne rescues her and says, Kelly, you gotta tease the guys first. And then maybe,
that's gotta be Vicky's role with the divas. She's gotta be Patricia Clarkson on TV.
But, I don't know. I don't know why we haven't seen this. My thinking is that maybe once you call a girl, a slut, on a professional wrestling stage, the audience will just love calling her a slut, and will just label her a slut from then on, and maybe it just won't work.
Yeah, maybe.
Sorry.
Cena is in a bar by himself, and he buys a beer, but then he has a moment of reflection, and he decides to pay for the beer but not drink it. He's not going to have a beer away.
So I guess he was an alcoholic, which I didn't know.
They never once said that. It was just implied in this scene. And amazingly, some people got that. Then he walks out of the bar and these three guys approach him. And they want to fight. And it ends with Cena putting one through a glass door. But then he takes a pipe to the back of the head. This was right out of... the Fit Finley Ming spot at Starcade 99. That's only right. The guy actually came from behind him and not in front, and then Cena had to sell not seeing him.
Yes.
So
and Ming wasn't arrested.
Yes. Go back to the house, and the mom gets a phone call who says, it's Mike, and he's... Says it's Mike, and he's drunk and in jail. And Cal says, I don't believe it. And the big reveal here is that he's been training with Mike. And we get a campy musical score here where the mom is upset because she has no relationship with her son, but Cal now does. And they're united by this horrible amateur wrestling. So we then hear the story here where Mike wanted to go scout one of his wrestling opponents in high school, and he pressured his dad to take him in a blizzard on the streets, and it led to a car accident where the dad died. And Cena wrestled for another year, then got injured, and his mom always secretly blamed Mike for killing her husband. And Mike could sense this blame.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is very good. Very emotional. This woman totally carries these scenes. Patricia Clarkson.
So the mom goes to the courthouse, and she bails out Mike. And she mentions that she was dating a district attorney for 20 minutes. And the DA... who dated this woman for 20 minutes, tracked down the waitress at the bar who is willing to testify that Mike did not drink or start the fight, and Mike is free to go. I'm amazed by the court system in Oklahoma. It's fantastic.
That's pretty cool.
And then she delivers this heartfelt scene about wanting her son back in this questioning room.
Uh-huh. It was really heartfelt, and it was really odd just to see John Cena in this scene. Here you have...
he just sat there and observed.
But here you have, and especially this and the next scene after this, you have John Cena. You have an Academy Award nominee giving a fantastic performance, you know, very emotional. Standing directly in front of her is a guy who's used to making fat jokes on Raw. John Cena.
Bit of a disconnect. And then it all builds up to this big tournament that Cal is in. And he wrestles his first match with none of his family there. He's all alone. And he wins his first match. And then he walks out. And he ignores Lully and Donald in the crowd. And then on day two, he returns. And Danny Glover shows up, whose name is Red. And we didn't really see too much of him in this movie. He was in like the first scene where he's just this old guy who fishes.
Yeah, he was in a couple scenes who he just always gives pep talks to Cal whenever Cal is...
the wise old man.
Yes.
That's his role. So he shows up here, and Cal is surprised that he's there. And Danny Glover says, no one wants you to win. They just don't want you to quit. So I'm going to go get a coffee and I'm going to go watch. And then the next scene, he was shown sitting there without a coffee. So they must have been out. So Mike shows up. What?
No, nothing.
You're not a fan
of
my
reviews. You pick
up
on funny things. You're very funny, man.
Well, why was that line there? I couldn't even just said, I'm going in to watch it. Instead, someone scripted the line, I'm going to get a coffee. Then I expect him to have a fucking coffee.
He probably finished his coffee, or maybe he has coffee down on the ground.
No. It's a fucking gymnasium. Someone's going to knock it over. I don't think they even sell coffee in high schools. I think it's illegal, actually, to sell caffeine products like coffee in high schools. I never had coffee in my high school.
Maybe you just decided, maybe I don't want coffee today. Maybe I want a ginger ale.
Don't put a lie in there. That's my problem.
You should have said, I'm not going to drink a coffee. I'm just
going to sit down. This movie, this was it for me. I was furious. Mike shows up. Cal wins his next match and injures the guy's shoulder. He's a very stiff worker. Mike congratulates him, gives him a pep talk, and the coach comes and says hi to Mike as well and says, you can have a seat next to me in the coach's position for the next match.
Cena, contrasting this part of the movie to the earlier part of the movie when he's in a very unhappy and mysterious state, he is starting to show more of his tried and true delivery that we see every week on Raw, where mm-hmm. his personality comes out, and it really is the same type of fun delivery that he does on Raw with his comedic promos every week.
Yes. Before the match, Cena and the Nat are with Cal, and he receives this giant present from Lully. First, he takes it out, and it's a motor. Or a pump. It's a pump, everybody. I don't know what this pump is for, but it's some pump that he needed. And it also comes with this hideous robe with flames on it. And all I could think of was that, what if he had lost that first match in the tournament, like 20 minutes earlier? What would he have used any of this shit for? She would have had to return it. What would he have used this robe for? Wouldn't she have given it to him before the first match of the day?
I guess she was very confident in him.
Who cares? So Cal then comes out, and suddenly it's a pro wrestling entrance where he's got pyro, confetti, and he's coming up to... It sounded like some Eminem knockoff tune, which was probably John Cena again.
Yeah, I think it was that same song.
Just another issue. It's like, why... Yeah, who cares?
My brother did my entrance song.
Couldn't be doing that badly if he's a fucking recording artist on top of being a deadbeat. But I guess there's John Cena and there's Mike Chetley. It's a difference. Before the match, Mike reveals to Cal that Red in the stands is actually Harry Newman, who is their dad's wrestling coach. And then Mike tells Cal, Dad's here.
Yes.
Dad's here.
So I guess this whole time we learned that Danny Glover has just been stalking this guy, Cal.
Yeah.
Fishing.
Yeah.
He's not really into fishing. He's just into stalking.
Cal is down 11-6 in the match. And then in the dying seconds way, he goes for the double cradle. And Mike says, he's going for it.
It's just like Silva versus Sonnen.
Yes. In the dying seconds, he tried to escape defeat. He applies the cradle, but he can't get the guy's shoulders down, and time is expiring as his mom is getting right into the wrestling match, saying, pull it, or squeeze, and everyone's going nuts, and the time expires, and the shoulder doesn't go down, and Cal loses 11-9, yet he gets a standing ovation as he hugs his mom, and then makes out with Lully. Then he fist pumps the dude that ripped open this girl's dress. And the beef has been forgotten, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So all is great in the world. Cal does not win the big match, but he's won the bigger match way. He's won his family back. And it ends with another lovely monologue from Danny Glover saying that he was supposed to look over the children of his student and that they're doing just fine. And that's how this lovely movie ends. Well,
I gotta say, the MVP of this movie experience has to be John Pollock, because while watching this movie, I really had trouble nitpicking and finding fault with it. But John, you have absolutely done a great job of it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's what I do, eh?
No, I mean that. And I mean that. That actually is a skill that is respectable.
Yeah, they call it jaded. I don't know. To me, it's like you put WWE Studios, the logo at the front. This was just another movie. Like, it was just nothing. There's no incentive to go watch this movie. It's not a great movie.
No.
It's trying to be, but not. So it's like, I would much rather WWE produces like a million See No Evil movies with Kane, where it's just absolutely ridiculous and that I can enjoy. Mm. I love See No Evil. It was exactly what I wanted. Campy horror shit with Kane. This was like, we want to get a nomination for this movie.
No, I highly doubt.
That was totally their focus here.
What, for a straight-to-DVD release?
It was not straight-to-DVD. They had a theatrical release for 2 weeks.
They had a two-week release.
They did about $100,000.
Okay. Well, I don't think anybody expected this to be an Oscar contender. But I think, in fact, we wanted to watch this to find cheesy elements of it. But I really did enjoy a lot of parts of it. And I think Patricia...
I would have much rather... I guarantee you I'd like this more than Knucklehead.
I think Knucklehead would have probably been a lot easier to review.
Oh, maybe to review, but not to watch.
But
I don't know.
I will say, though, this is probably one of the few good wrestling movies, like a movie involving a pro wrestler, that I would say exists.
I wouldn't say it was good, but I'm not going to call it the worst movie I've ever seen or anything like that.
All right.
But it was, Patricia Clarkson was fine in it. John Cena, I didn't find too inspiring at all. He was pretty nothing.
He was protected.
Very protected.
He was protected. He was the name on the marquee, but he was, it was Paul Heyman booking. He was very limited in his role.
All right, so that was Legendary, everybody. If any of you watched that movie, please let us know. We're going to get into our feedback.
Well, what's
now.
Your rating, John?
Oh, on this movie, I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 10.
You're giving it 3.5? Okay, well, if I am grading this on the scale that we grade The Wrong Side of Town, on the scale that we grade Starrcade 1999, and based on that scale, I give this an 8 out of 10.
8?
8 out of 10.
Holy
it was,
shit.
Like I said, I had trouble finding too many faults with it. My standards were not that high for this movie, and it was an enjoyable viewing.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, Wei. That's 8 out of 10.
An 8 out of 10.
Fuck. That was like... That's 2 below what we gave, like, When Worlds Collide.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly what I was thinking.
All right. Let's get into the feedback, everybody. Ben Breezebaugh. Okay, here we go. I saw Legendary when it came out on DVD. It really wasn't that terrible. Just your standard sappy movie aimed at a middle American audience. Could have been made for TV. I don't know what they were thinking, since the kind of people who watch those kind of movies probably stay away from anything with a WWE logo on it.
I agree with you, but I personally, I'm not the type to watch any of those WWE action movies or action movies, period. And I was drawn to this because it was something different. It was the WWE trying to do drama, and in particular, John Cena trying to do drama, which I found to be a very interesting concept. Next, we have Sergey Gavrilik. Legendary is yet another Karate Kid remake. This time, the kid wrestles and his Mr. Miyagi is on steroids. I don't know what to say about Cena's acting there, other than his retirement speech on Raw was better.
I'd agree with that. Brian Hillhouse, do you guys think it would help the WWE to bring back the gimmick-heavy characters? I have been a gamer since I was a kid, and have the current SmackDown vs. Raw game. When I decide to create a wrestler, I don't go with the current WWE template. I will jazz him up, maybe apply some face paint, a few extra pounds, and finally give him a unique name instead of a name that sounds like someone who can live next door. And I see that a lot of people will upload a similar type of character online. I don't know. I feel going in the gimmick-heavy direction is a mistake. That was their whole thought process mm-hmm. back when the UFC was first starting to really take off, was that we'll go in the complete opposite direction. And to me, I don't think people are as into that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of gimmicks. I think it's much more too cartoony for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I agree with you, but we're also MMA fans, so I don't know. I think it's... That's a bit of a problem with the WWE in that they can't be too outrageous for the current landscape that of combat sports right now, yet they can't be real enough because they are competing with real sports like the UFC. So I guess some type of middle ground there.
I think there's definitely room for characters like that. I don't want to see all of the same presentation. I think if you have one or two guys that are really these ridiculous characters.
I don't need to see a garbage man, though. There's no way I can take a garbage man seriously.
But there's some gimmicks where they're great. I mean, there's a role for guys like a Santino Marella, if you want to call that a...
Those aren't even real gimmicks, though. Like, a Mr. Perfect is not necessarily a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a guy who's very cocky, and he at the end of the day, he's still a wrestler. Not a garbage man or a...
Yeah.
I don't know.
It all depends, I think, just on the character, but I don't see them going, you know, top to bottom with just ridiculous gimmicks.
Yeah. This is me. Arum Nasrallah. Oh my, who hates you since you got legendary for Christmas? I didn't get legendary for Christmas. I was saying if people did get legendary for Christmas. No one's that mean to me. I had given my 2 cents earlier about this shithole of a movie. It's the most cheesy movie. Stereotypical-wise, older black man, the geek who overcame his problems, the mom who wants her family back as it once was, and that lame fight scene at the bar. But a little fun fact, the kid brother is actually on Dexter, playing teenage Dexter in the flashbacks. The Marine and 12 Rounds were Oscar-worthy winners compared to this crap. I haven't seen Knucklehead yet, but I am pretty sure it's more easy to watch. I don't know about that. We'll see. And for last week's info about who... wants to be what you like to view live. What's to be viewed live?
Which event rather watch live?
Right. Then you are truly right about the atmosphere at a UFC event. What I meant was that visually, the WWE show, I could see the stuff happening a lot better. Happy New Year's to both of you. And John, please never stop telling stories from MMA and wrestling worlds. Yeah, don't stop, John.
Okay.
My favorite was about the Rico Rodriguez drunk driving. What a tool. By the way, I posted a comment on Scott Putski's wall for 2011. I wanted to win the Scott Putski Award. And he replied with, right on. He must be aware of the greatest award ever.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I don't know if he's aware.
That's great. Well, Forrest Bowling. Both Law and Raw were great this week. Heggy weight title was hilarious, along with the ideas of why Benoit would even say that. Sometimes you just have to give up and let stupidity take the blame. I also have a request. With my Amazon gift card, I bought Victory Road 2004 for 40 cents today and would love to hear a review.
40 cents.
Wow.
That's 40 cents too much.
I would say so.
Okay. Alex R. Stephanie T. Straight to the point. John and Wei, what do you think about Punk joining Nexus and what will happen to Wade Barrett?
Well, we kind of went over this on Review of Raw.
Yeah.
I feel that we'll see how the follow-up is. It's definitely not an angle that by the end I was super stoked about. Well, I want to see what's next. I feel the Nexus core there minus the leader is kind of immaterial, really. It's just what can they do with Punk now that leader role? And with Barrett, as we talked about on Tuesday, you would seem that there would eventually be a feud with Punk and Barrett for leadership. But I don't know if it's a little too early to turn Wade Barrett. Cliff Leeser. Am I the only one that thought it would have been nice to have seen Lawler blade when Miz hit his head on the table? I know they wouldn't have done it because of the PG shit, but I mean, come on, even more heat. You know, I'm not one that's, as heavy on the of blood. Yeah. I think in certain situations, like the Hell in a Cell, it is kind of it kind of does warrant it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not to me. It ruins stuff when you don't have blood in an angle. I think it does somewhat make the guys work a bit harder and be more creative.
Mm-hmm.
Blood can add a lot to a match, but I don't think it's the be all end all.
In this setting, I didn't think it would have added anything. I mean, he gave him what's the name of the
skull-crushing
finale? Skull-crushing finale, yes. He gave it to him on the mat.
I do feel that whenever they do bring back blood, the first time they do it, it'll be a huge deal.
Yeah,
because it'll be so long since anyone's seen it.
Perhaps. To be honest with you, I rarely even notice the absence of the blood there.
Yeah.
It's not like I never really crave it. Jack Pisco, John and Way, this was the worst Starrcade ever. Starrcade 1999, of course. It even came complete with a bullshit Montreal screw job. This was one of the many reasons why Vince Russo is hated. Just terrible booking and unnecessary stipulations that made for a horrendous pay-per-view. This is probably the blueprint for the current TNA product. In regards to Monday Night Raw, it was a good show to end the year. I like the CM Punk storyline, but it seems like it is Straight Edge Society 2000. Only this time, instead of Rey Mysterio or Big Show being converted by Punk, it's John Cena. And speaking of which, your legendary review will be interesting to hear since you guys missed the limited release. But you guys got to review Knucklehead. I'm pretty sure Review Away Faithful will provide a link so you don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, we'll see about Knucklehead. That's still a big step for me. John Blake. Okay, because I know you guys on here would know. What's the deal with Matt Hardy? Is he staying totally indie like Christopher Daniels, or is TNA looking at him? Just wasting time before work and caught some training montage video of him on YouTube saying he's planning a comeback. I think his no-compete clause is up in like a couple of weeks, so he could be joining TNA very soon. I fully expect him to be in TNA.
Ahmad Butt, great job hosting Law on Sunday. I'm particularly fond of John's rendition of the Batista classic, "You were supposed to be my friend." I have to be a self-righteous prick and pat myself on the back for predicting that Punk would join Nexus. I hope he ends up being the mastermind or higher power as opposed to just taking Wade Barrett's spot, as that would probably evolve into a Wade and Punk program for WrestleMania. I'm far more interested in Punk and Cena main eventing Mania. The Miz and Alex Riley storyline looks like it'll be a Riley and Miz program at WrestleMania. Will it be for the belt?
No.
I highly doubt. If I had to guess, I could see them either putting the belt on Punk at Elimination Chamber, or so you have Cena and Punk for the championship, or you have Riley win the Money in the Bank and cash in on Miz at WrestleMania. The only other thought I have is that Daniel Bryan is way more over than 50% of the WWE's established and homegrown mid-carders. Have a great New Year's.
Well, I'm sure Alex Riley would love to have Ahmad Butt on the creative team, but I do not see Alex Riley anywhere near
main
the WWE title, especially at WrestleMania. I would be shocked if Riley is even working on the show.
Yeah.
I feel he will be in Miz's corner at best. Matt Cruz, the whole Nexus storyline started with them destroying the Ross and him beating up Cena and Punk, only for it to lead to Punk becoming the leader of Nexus and feuding with John Cena. But I guess we were not supposed to remember that. That's right. They did destroy Punk there in that first night. Also, if you guys want to see a great viral video, check out Ultimate Warrior Gay or Ultimate Zombie Movie on YouTube. Yeah, the Ultimate Warrior one I've seen. That's a pretty old one.
Yeah, that's a good one. But yes, the Punk thing, I highly doubt they would bring that back up. Although they did bring up Dave Bautista.
Who knows?
So finally, we have Dennis Amaya. What an excellent edition of the Law and Review Away this past Sunday. I applaud both Joe Poe and Way for putting themselves through some of the worst events in the history of life.
Of life.
And now you're reviewing this movie? I once again applaud you. Happy New Year, and hopefully 2011 will bring even worse movies and events and even better reviews.
Well, that's the pessimistic outlook we love people to have.
Yes.
So that brings us to an end as we kick off 2011, Way.
Yeah.
And we'll finish off for next week. I thought we could take a look at the 2000 Royal Rumble, which amazingly was 11 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm starting to feel really old when I can remember these events.
That's right. It was 11 years ago. And who were the main competitors of this Royal Rumble?
The Rumble at that time, we would have had...
Isn't this the one with the Hardys and...
The Hardys against the Dudleys are on that
show.
Yes,
as well as Mick Foley's retirement match.
This was the match of the year in 2000 with Triple H and Cactus Jack.
Not his retirement match, but...
The month before that, yes. So we'll see how that holds up. And yes, this one took place from Madison Square Garden, and all of the talent showed up at this pay-per-view at Madison Square Garden, despite any weather problems.
Weather problems for this show?
On the weekend, I'm saying at Madison Square Garden, guys couldn't show up. So this
okay, I gotcha.
The weather did not affect it. So I thought we could review that as we get into, we're just a couple of weeks away from the Royal Rumble,
mm-hmm.
and we'll take a look back at that show. But Way... as always, when I pick, you get to pick the music going out here. So do you have a tune in mind?
Let's go with Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony.
All right, Crossroads, everybody.
By Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Well, Mary, don't you eat. Tell the Martha not to mourn.
Martha, don't you mourn.
Pharaoh's army.
Pharaoh's army.
You know they've been drowned. Singing Mary.
Oh, Mary, don't you eat.
Tell the Martha not to mourn.
Judgment comes for you.
What you gonna do
when it ain't nowhere to hide?
When judgment comes for you,
'cause it's gonna come for you.
Is it too soft for Charlie? Little fool, the guy got him, and I'm gonna miss everybody. I'll roll and roll my gang, look at him while he lies. And play for dust, and they play too deep for being sad. Little as I got to be, tell me your future deceased when it bleeds. Baby, bye, my grand.
God bless you, work another plan to heaven. Follow the Lord on 24/7 days. God is who we praise. Even though the devil's all up in my face, but he's giving me safe and in my place. Say grace to the gates of race, but I'd change the face of judge. And against my soul will buzz. Grudge me, there's no mercy to do. Ooh, what can I do? It's all about the family and how we do. Can I get a witness? Let it unfold. We live in our lives, we turn our soul. Hey,
hey, and we pray, and we pray, and we pray, and we pray. Every day, every day, every day, every day. And we pray, and we pray, and we pray, and we pray. Still with lace.
Now follow me, Rostro. Weather is telling me Sammy. Come on, so take a the people that's long gone there.
While he's there, terrible.
Instead of keeping up with my family. Exactly how many days we got last it? While you laughing, we're passing, passing the whip.
And I'm with y'all, so I don't want my meat to walk at the crossroads. Y'all know, never ever got love with them both of us, baby.
Even I'm gone, really wish you'd come home. But when they tell me that I gotta go bye-bye, all the little thug could do was cry. Why they kill my dog?
Yeah, man, I miss my Uncle Charles, y'all. And he shouldn't be gone in front of his home. When they did, the group was wrong. Pull the rope, go wrong. Gotta hold on, gotta stay strong. When it did come, better believe on. Gotta show that you can lean on, lean on.
Yeah, we pray, we pray, we pray, we pray. Every day, every day, every day, every day. And we pray, we pray, and we pray, and we pray. Every day.
Big Mac Chetley died before he had a chance to finish the job. That was his greatest fear, that Sharon and the boys would struggle on without him.
Mark, kid.
Thanks. You thought I was done, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
He once asked me if anything were to happen to him, that I might help keep an eye on the boys. Mac, your boys are fine. So is your girl.